That's right. Okay. Cryo sound acoustic imaging camera. So you have a camera, virtual camera, and then you directed this camera on PCB. And on that PCB, you have resistors, transistors, whatever, capacitors, microprocessors, anything you wish you have on PCB. And then, if any one of them is slightly hot, there is a chance that it produces sound. You cannot hear the sound, but the camera has 200 microphones. And each of the microphone has 100 kilohertz bandwidth. And that camera is called CRY-8124. Again, CRY-8124. So there was the video that was showing it. Quite interesting. It looks like you have a picture, you put it on the PCB, directly on the PCB, and then you see number of points on the picture with different colors, with red being the most loud. I wonder if you had a chance to look at it, Dr. Ray.
Yeah, but if I was looking for an overexposure, I would much sooner use a thermal imager, which I have, than a high-frequency sound detector. I mean, it might vibrate, but it just as well might not vibrate. A hot component is going to be hot, though. So you'd pick it up 100% of the time on a thermal imager and maybe 15% on a sound detector. Those things are primarily used, as far as I'm aware, to detect gas leaks, because obviously if gas leaks, the site of the leaking generates a high-pitched frequency sound. That's the most likely use for a device like this. And I saw it on a YouTube about 3-4 months ago that Linus, the guy from Canada, bought one and found some gas leaks in his air tubing running through his laboratory. Are you there, Wesley?
Yes, I am. Okay, so I have only two left. LFP batteries, lithium iron phosphate. We saw in the news, also in the videos, in the YouTubes, burning cars, electrical cars, and problem with those batteries. In some of them, there is no way to simply use any kind of extinguisher. The chemical reaction has to end. There is nothing for the car. And they have iron phosphate, LFP batteries. And those batteries are known for the high safety. And on the video that I have sent you, the guy takes the scissors and cut the battery in half. And the battery still works. The half of the battery still works, and there is no fume, no nothing. So, and of course, those batteries are very low in price. I would love to have your comment, Dr. Ray.
I wouldn't say they're low in price. They're lower now than when they first came out about 10 years ago. Lithium iron phosphate, pretty much are all manufactured in China. I have a few of them as my emergency rechargeable batteries. I've had it for about 8-9 years, I think. And they're still taking their charge. Apparently, they're capable of being recharged over 1,000 times. They have a stable discharge curve where they maintain most of their voltage potential until near the end. Other than, you know, lead acid is terrible that way. You can, when you drain it halfway, it goes down from a voltage of, you know, 12 and change to 8 or 9. Yeah. So it's a very nice technology. It's not very new. It's gone down in price. You can burn almost anything if you're determined enough to. But it's a relatively safe design. But, of course, battery manufacturers are working what's going to be coming next. There's a company called TCL in China that is producing small amounts. When I say small amounts, I'm talking about, you know, 100,000 or so of sodium-based solid-state batteries that look like they may be interesting. They don't have quite the energy density that lithium batteries do because they're just heavier with the same charge. But that seems to be one of the new technologies that we'll be hearing about as time goes on.
Yeah, you didn't say about the safety of this new battery.
Say again?
Yeah, you said about the battery, about the concept, but you didn't say how safe it is.
I said it's safe. I said if you want to burn almost anything, you can, but this is a much more difficult and much less likely to combust. So it's a safer battery design. It has a less charge density, though, so you would need a heavier lithium iron phosphate battery to give you the same amount of power that a lithium iron battery would. But it's safer, yeah.
KG2RY.
Yes, David?
I have a question, so please put me on the list.
Okay.
Yeah, I have only one more, and I'm done. So talking about the lithium iron phosphate. Energy runs 205 watt hour per kilogram. Energy density is about 396 watt hour per liter. A cycle, about 9,000 cycles, not bad. And nominal voltage per cell, 3.2 volt, which is standard. And the lifespan is 10 years. I'm not sure how long Tesla batteries last, but people see a significant difference. Anyhow, the last one is, so I'm watching the YouTubes, and then all of a sudden they have that advertisement. The advertisement says, 32 terabytes SSD. For $70, but then you look at it, and then you see that the professional 32 terabyte SSD is $5,795.71. But forgetting about the cents, 5,700. And then the Chinese says, you know what? If you buy boot two, we drop the price, or three, and you can buy it for $70, instead of $70, you buy it for $45, and it's 32 terabytes SSD. And of course, every video you start on the browser that is not protected against those ads, any ads, you have that. So somebody put a significant amount of money to pay for it. And another one is NASA air conditioner. NASA air conditioner, 20 seconds cools you, in 20 seconds cools your room. But coming back to 22 terabytes SSD, what's your thought about it, Dr. Roy?
It's a fraud. We've talked about this before. Unfortunately, one of Amazon's weaknesses is they don't really pay attention to the ads until you complain, and then they'll take it off, and the same guy will just change the name of the ad and put it back on. So these are all, crooks. They're overpricing much lower capacity memory, and they burn the command chip to read an incredibly absurd storage density that it will not be able to do without corrupting what little you were able to put on the device. In the same way with the swamp humidifiers, basically, if you live in Arizona, maybe, and your humidity is 2%, if you have water kind of flowing through a piece of cloth, the evaporation will cool down your environment without increasing your humidity too much. But let me try again. It's a scam. They're all scams. The high storage memory devices, the swamp coolers, all those things are just people stealing your money.
And Roy, you came through 100%, by the way.
Oh, okay, very good. I think there's a problem with Glen Oaks, because Glen Oaks was getting distorted for some reason, and I assume that you're not listening to Glen Oaks.
I was having that problem for a while.
What problem?
For some reason, I was receiving the repeater, and it was kind of crackly.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the repeater circuits certainly that feed into All-Star are a little on the wonky side.
Well, I was having a problem with the RF. The RF, usually I get an armchair copy from Glen Oaks.
Well, it may not be that it was an RF signal that was causing it. It might have been simply that my connection to All-Star that then gets switched over to RF for you to listen on your radio heard the distortion. I can't tell you for sure.
You sound perfectly good to me. I'm using RF on my iPhone.
Okay. Well, for a while, something was getting distorted. I was talking. I was looking at my waveform coming off of Glen Oaks, and it was not normal. So there was something between the Glen Oaks repeater and the All Star circuitry that was distorting. It could have been all from the Glen Oaks, or it could have been all from the All Star. I can't really tell you.
Well, years ago, I was doing All Star with some odd browser in a Windows 10 computer, and it worked pretty good.
Well, but these things are always subject to change, especially you've had computers where your computer worked fine at night, and you went to sleep, and you got up in the morning, and you tried to use it in the morning, and for some reason it was sluggish. So, computers always do stuff like that. So, and that's what the All-Star basically is. It's some, I don't know if it's a Raspberry Pi or it's a PC or it's an Apple. I don't know, but there's some kind of PC-based interface that's hooked into the repeater setup between Glen Oak and the other two repeaters.
Well, Well, there is an app that you can buy, $8, and works on iPhone, and it works on AllStar and or Echolink. And I've had some very good luck with it.
Yeah, but it's still going through the All-Star node that's connected to the repeater, which is the thing that's causing the problem.
QSL. I'm not getting the problem, but, you know, everybody has their own thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so guys, thank you very much for tonight, and to extremely clear.
Okay, thank you, Wesley.
From KG2RY. Yeah, I saw the title of the YouTube video says, your car is watching you. Do you know anything about this?
Not specifically, but nowadays everything is hooked up to data lines, the internet, satellite radio, cell towers and what have you. And they have sensors, and I'm sure they can call home to daddy. So we've talked about this before, that our present digital world is not a world of privacy. You know, hopefully nothing you say or do is going to be flashed up on the next, NBC News, but it'll be available for some people to play around with. So it doesn't surprise me, and although it upsets people when they're reminded of it, no one actually bothers to change anything, so it remains the same.
QSL. Well, as an artist, I create work. Audio, visual, photo, artwork that much of it goes into the pool, you know, that it becomes part of a global communication and people have access. And I think it's a good way to serve and also to give something to the world. Whether I get something out of it or not, well, maybe that'll happen, maybe it won't.
Okay, well, if you feel that way, you have a right and a privilege to feel that way. I understand a lot of artists are very upset with lack of copyright, lack of privacy. And especially when these trillion-dollar companies are going to make $1 trillion off of downloading their stuff and feeding it to train artificial intelligence algorithms. But, you know, you're free to have your opinion.
Well, you know, I see it this way. If I'm communicating with someone on the social media and the group of words that I use, you know, I see them, they end up in advertisements and other postings, you know, those words. And, you know, I don't know, it was so easy for them to think of those words, you know, without actually seeing them posted there.
Okay, well, it depends. But there are people who make a very good living deciding on these words. You know, coming up with a name for yet a new medication can earn you a pretty penny. So, you know, if someone wants to give it away, I guess they're free to do so. But when someone else kind of takes it from them and puts it in a different frame of reference, it's okay to, you know, have a list of make-believe names for drugs versus another guy who downloads it, takes it over to his ad agency, and, you know, clears $500,000 a year salary by stealing other people's intellectual property.
Well, you know, it goes into the pool. And, you know, if somebody chooses to compensate me for it, beyond that, it's like I'm really happy with what I have. You know, I'm not really so interested to create things for the big money. Maybe that would be nice. I don't know. I don't know if I could be so responsible with a big bank account.
Okay, again, that's up to you, and that's your business. A lot of people, especially if they're successful and they do this for many years, I mean, just Google song copyright law case, and you know where people are fined millions of dollars from copying someone else's song. The people who originated the song, I think, are upset that they did it to be paid, and they want their money. And some guy who just basically copies it and takes advantage of it for their own benefit. It's not like these guys at NAI are doing it for the sake of humanity. They're doing it for the sake of their trillion-dollar stock options.
Well, I think about it this way. I'll put a video up onto YouTube. YouTube is not a great place to put videos because most people, they don't have a premium. So, you know, they get all the commercials before, commercials after, some many times commercials in between. And there was guitar work that I posted up there, you know, with a picture. Picture was an abstract picture, and, then I see somebody else put a video there. You know, the picture was changed somehow from a cityscape to a western view. And the music, you know, it almost sounded like what I made, but, you know, the music that he used was artificial intelligence, and you know, it had a rhythm and a beat and a bass line and drums and all. And mine was just the guitar.
Okay. Well, I mean, the problem with digital swap is that's what it does best. It just layers stuff upon stuff upon stuff. Now, if you happen to like it, great. If you don't like it, some people find it has a somewhat soulless quality to it.
Well, it can be, how to say, you can create new things, and you can have many layers of abstraction on it. And the layers of abstraction add up to something that's more like an opinion, fantasy, or fiction. And, you know, it's not a fact, and it's not factual. So if I say that I'm creating a fantasy, I hope that people will like what I'm posting.
Okay, and like I said before, it's up to you. You release it in the way that you want to release it. The problem with AI and copyright is usually people release it to the general audience just to kind of take a look at a computer screen. There were no spoken privileges of being able to repurpose it for a trillion-dollar, artificial intelligence algorithm. So, you know, some people are fine with it, but a lot of people aren't. They feel as though a big overpriced company basically stole their stuff and they're going to profit. And they think that if anyone should profit from stuff that they created, they should be at least part of the deal. Whereas, you know, AI is never going to do that because if they had to actually give everyone a piece of the action, then they wouldn't be filthy rich. So, you know, they say thank you, but no thank you. And you got to take it to court, which will probably be going on for the foreseeable future.
Well, I was reading about this. AI, there's no copyright for AI. And there are companies, people, that can detect whether something is AI or not. So most of my visual, audio-visual material is copyrighted, copyright.gov.
Okay, yeah, the ability to detect artificial intelligence is really bad. It gets a lot of false positives, gets a lot of false negatives. You can't rely on that, unfortunately. And, theoretically, an artificial intelligence algorithm cannot itself copyright material. Well, only human beings can copyright material. You know, what happens if it's just a figment of the AI's imagination? I'm not quite sure, and I don't think it's been permanently settled yet either. But it's deeply problematic. It's not like, at this point, there's no kind of tendency to treat AIs as actual living things, thankfully. Every so often, some guy who's been working way too hard on software design pronounces that the artificial intelligence that he's in communications with is actually alive and fully conscious. But, you know, you give them some antipsychotic medication and sometimes they get better.
Well, as I said before, you know, it can be one of many layers, like artificial intelligence, picture, sound, movement, you know, is one layer. Then you have maybe seven or eight other layers. The idea of using artificial intelligence as a layer means that, you know, the artist, creator, visual person has more control. If you're using just artificial intelligence, then you only get what the machine will give you.
Well, it ultimately it depends. These images are usually generated using either downloaded bitmaps or prompts. The more bitmaps and the more prompts, the more it's directed. The less it's directed, and it'll just come up with something randomly as a function of its stored training materials probability value.
In music, I see artificial intelligence as like a drone. You know, the digital tambura, the Indian instrument that you use. Maybe if you're meditating and you have that sound going on, and you can control how much of it goes into the composition or not. You know, I think that that's probably more of a useful way, you know, to interact with that. You know, why does it have to be so important?
Well, again, it depends on the programmer, the underlying motivations, whether it's for professionals or complete amateurs. The closer it gets to being for complete amateurs, the more it's basically push a button and you'll see a picture magically appear. That's kind of what the audience is looking for, and that's what they're given, as opposed to if you want someone to kind of ever so slightly tweak some aspects of an image, then they make much more granular tools like Photoshop is getting these days.
I have a friend. She wants to be an artist. She never went to art school. She never had training. She doesn't know how to draw. She doesn't know how to paint. She wants to learn how to take pictures and make videos, but she never learned how to do it, you know. And she said, Dave, you know, I'm so happy we have artificial intelligence. You know, I can make a video and, you know, with the very minimum, I don't have any experience, you know, and that's how a lot of people think.
I agree with you. I've heard those types of sentiments on YouTube where a gentleman with a straight face said that he doesn't really have the patience to draw, but he wants to create art. So he just writes in words and prompts, and he considers himself a very good artist.
Well, that's basically what she was saying, you know, that she can do all these amazing things, but she doesn't have to know anything about art.
Yeah, there are a lot of delusional people out there, and like I said, for companies that are selling software, they'll take those people's money, as good as anyone else's, and give them exactly what they want, a magic box that you push the button, and an image comes on the screen, and you can lie and tell your friends that you made that image.
Yes, but, you know, a person who doesn't know how to make art or to do those kinds of creative things, you know, they don't have any control over the result of the words they put in there. So the machine gives them something they have to be happy with.
Yeah, exactly. But for those people, they're more than happy to consider that their art, because they were the person that pushed the button.
Well, you know, a lot of people that don't like the world of art, you know, the way you have to interact with art dealers and gallery directors and museum people and all, you know, you want to get a show, and it's really impossible. And now the economy is sort of low, and the art world is changing, and it becomes easier and easier to make the art, but probably harder and harder to get a show.
Okay, but I mean, that's a different problem entirely. You're talking about your friend. She has no particular skill. She has no training. She has no ability. She has nothing. She just has a credit card. So, I mean, that's different exactly than the business aspect of an art, which is completely different than the art itself.
Well, you know, the art world and the institution of art, you know, what an artist has to do, you know, to get a show, if one part, you know, of their job is making the art, they use the artificial intelligence and they do all the other things so they can get a show. But, you know, if you get a gallery like that, it's seemingly impossible to make money from it. So maybe, you know, the internet, in this case, is a good thing.
Well, ultimately, it depends what you're in it for. If you're just in it for the sake of showing people, you can put it up on a page and show people. If you're looking to make a living or to have an effect on the art world, that's much more difficult, but not exactly the same as the art itself. So that requires a completely different skill set. And there are people who have managers and other people where they, you know, they turn it over to them and they have them do the business stuff because their skill set is in the art world and not particularly in the business end. So that's a completely different thing than some poor person who aspires to be creatively brilliant without any interest in sweating for it whatsoever. If you don't work on it, it's very difficult for things to just come to you out of nowhere. So people who think that they could just use artificial intelligence as a way to get around the hard work of creativity, they're just fooling themselves, in my humble opinion.
Well, would you say that this is a good way to do it? You get a domain name. I have some domain names. One domain name, and you host a website. Maybe one or two pages, you know, with pictures on the first page so that the SEO reads you better. And on the second page, you embed maybe like 5 or 6 videos with some text, you know, describing the artist and what he is and all that. And having that, maybe 2,000 unique visitors every month, and then you can post the URL on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can do that, and many people have. One of the positive aspects of the Internet is the ability to extend your reach. You know, you couldn't really do that before the Internet, but the downside is if everyone is doing it, how do you differentiate yourself from everyone else? And usually what happens is a lot of sites are just kind of orphan sites. Very few to no one visits them, and it gets nothing in the form of traffic. But, you know, others take off with some viral impact and become very effective.
Well, also on the QRZ website, on my page, I get maybe 1,000 visitors, I'd say every 2 weeks. Yeah, there's like 199,000 visitors to that page. I don't understand how that is. And on the domain name page, you know, I don't know who looks at it, but, you know, the videos have counters on them, so I'll check into that. And, you know, why is it so important anyway? And I have 10 or 12 hard drives, old hard drives, you know, 2 terabits, 4 terabits, 8 terabits, and filled with material that nobody has ever seen.
Okay, I mean, you can share them if you can afford the hard drive space for the web servers. A lot of times these contacts can be robots, unfortunately. As I mentioned to you, where for some strange reason a Russian bot had planted itself on the front screen of my audio stream of Kings County Radio Club's repeater. So some percentage of them are probably bots.
And one more
UI
question.
Yeah, thanks.
When you say this Russian bot planted itself on your screen, what exactly does that mean?
It meant that it was displaying the same screen that I was looking at, that it had logged into IceCast. I use IceCast to publish audio of Kings County Radio Club's repeater and Limark's repeater in the technical net. And so on the front page, it has everyone who's logged on and has access to download the audio stream.
All right, thanks. And one mighty way.
You're welcome. Back to you, David.
QSL. Yeah, I make it a point, you know, not to put everything up on the Internet. And, yes, I know about the bots, but having a website, you know, which is in relation to some kind of business or some activity that I do or an interest that I have, and I could just hand them a card, they could look at the page. Sort of easy to access.
Yes, I understand. It's being done a lot. You know, people have cards with the regular type. Sometimes they actually put a code on the back of them and, you know, tell them to just scan it with their cameras. And it's a great way to spread your stuff.
Well, I wouldn't play with the QR code. It makes me nervous. I just give them the name of the website and on the flip side, the phone number of the internet-free phone.
Okay, sounds like a reasonable plan.
Very good, sir. Thank you very much.
Anything else for tonight, David?
I don't know. I still think about that YouTube video. Woman says, you know, my car is watching me.
Well, a lot of things are watching us, unfortunately. Cameras are all over the place, and we buy our own cameras and put them up, and almost all of them are manufactured in China. There's always concern of whether there are back doors from those manufacturers, so you never know. I mean, I once ran a free piece of software that showed cameras in my house, and very kind, someone contacted me because one of the images had my call sign in the background, and he was a ham, and he said, by the way, fella, this is going out to almost anyone and everyone that wants to look at it. So unless you really want to publicize that that camera, you might want to shut it off. So that was very useful. But, I mean, there's lots of other, and it had, the software looked secure. It had passwords and all kinds of things, but it let people look at the camera output without any password for some reason.
Well, that is this software that is in my phone, which I disconnected the cellular data and any possible RF tracking for the intercom in the building. And what I did was I set it up on my computer and shut it off on my phone. You know, there are things you can do inside your phone that will have much less tracking and hacking and marketing in your phone. You know, you just have to know what settings to make.
Yeah, we talked about this before. It also kind of limits the functionality of the cell phone. Whereas, you know, if you set it for airplane mode, then yeah, you're not going to get information leaking out of your RF antennas. But you're also not going to get your phone to ring if someone's calling you.
That's why I have an internet-free phone. That phone is for talking, and this phone is for everything else. You know, you can leave the cellular data on, but, you know, there may be four or five different settings you have to make before you minimize the amount of tracking, hacking, and marketing in your phone. That, you know, the only thing I leave on to a very minimal extent is a location.
Okay, again, that's up to you. Some people would be kind of nervous about someone checking where you are, you know, every 10 minutes.
Yeah, I guess the idea is if you look and see what settings you're making, you get a much better idea of who can hack you and track you and who cannot.
Yeah, well, but a lot of people don't want to be bothered, or they don't understand what it means, or they don't exactly know what each thing is. It's easier to say than to do, and a lot of people just kind of get a little lazy about these things and forget about them. You know. Otherwise, things would probably be a wee bit more secure than they are, but you're not going to change people's nature. They'd rather complain about it after the fact and understand what they can do and actually get into the habit of doing them.
An iPhone is a very sophisticated device. There are a lot of things that you can do with an iPhone.
That's true. I mean, but the same thing can be said for Android. These are very sophisticated pieces of equipment, very expensive pieces of equipment. Some people understand them completely. Some people hack them and break them and jailbreak them and all kinds of things. But a lot of people just kind of put it in their pocket and, you know, let whatever happens, happen.
Well, you can also buy a simple phone. They were talking about how teenagers, they're getting rid of their iPhones. They're getting rid of their cellular phones and buying dumb phones, flip phones with just talk and text, flip phones. And, you know, I've been doing this for a number of years now. You know, the simplicity is very good.
Well, some people, especially some children, can live like that. All they need to do is text. Others have applications that they live on 24/7, and they simply need them. Otherwise, they feel isolated. So, you know, you'll get some kids who will go along with stupid phones, but I don't think the smartphone industry has anything to worry about. I think they've addicted enough people to the feature sets of smartphones to make a decent profit.
Roy, everybody has a choice, and they can choose whether they believe it or not.
Well, most people have a choice, but some never get around to choosing it. You know, I mean, we thankfully have more choices than other people. In Russia, there is a state-run application called Max, which is basically spyware. And they have been wreaking havoc in Russia, forcing their population to discontinue all the third-party applications and switch everything to Max.
I can't tell you anything about it because I didn't hear that story. But, you know, what is good, you know, simplicity good, you know, compared to more complex technology, you know. And maybe one day, you know, we'll be back to where we were years ago. People running 3G, 2G, you know, cell phone nuts. You opened it up and, you know, there was no internet there and there was no hacking, tracking, marketing, spamming, scamming, or spying.
Yeah, short of World War III, I doubt that.
Oh, I think that this should not be the reason for a world conflict.
No, I'm not saying that it would be the cause for world conflict. It would be the consequence of world conflict. You'd have to basically blow up all the infrastructure to get most people to go back to older cell phone technologies.
Well, that could happen. Maybe it's better. Maybe it's not better. We could do it without the world conflict.
Well, theoretically, yes, you could be able to do it, but is it an easy thing to do? You know, we've talked about it before. No doubt we'll talk about it again. You try and talk a 16-year-old into giving up his smartphone for a stupid phone. Lots of luck on that.
Well, think about it this way. Sitting with the family in my sister's house, her daughter's 16, 17 years old, and we were talking about phones, cell phones, and iPhones, and internet-free phones, and flip phones. You know, she said, you know, I think it's a really good idea. I want to get a flip phone. You know, I said, are you sure you want to do it? There's no internet in there. She said, yeah, it would be great, you know. And I was really surprised that she had this idea in her mind that she's going to buy a flip phone.
Okay, very good. But again, I think in the long run, people are going to want more features rather than less features. But, you know, anything's possible. You know, there might be some kind of weird religious revival, and everyone will kind of want to live like it's the 17th century.
Well, I tell you, Roy, I leave my iPhone at home, and I take my internet-free flip phone in my pocket, and I take an audio player, a lossless audio player, with a pair of hi-fi headphones, and I go out into the street. There's so many things you can do around here, and the music makes it so nice.
Okay, we've talked about that before. We'll probably talk about that in the future. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. There are people who simply cannot be disconnected from their cell phone. It's almost like it's an appendage at this point for them.
Yes, sir. And also third-party software for audio, you know, when you're listening. The Apple EarPods, they sound fantastic. Then what kind of software would you use to play lossless audio? Like, there are two or three different software packages sound.
And Dave, did you hear my transmission? Let me make sure this is going okay.
QSL, Paul. I copy you 100%.
I guess Roy had problems. It sounds like he's on RF now to me. I'm not sure. But okay, we'll report unless somebody has another comment.
He said he had a problem with the mixer.
Yeah, okay. I know he's listening. All right, very good. And, yeah, talking about technology, Wednesday night, I live in Ronkonkoma, the whole area, cable system went down, so no telephone, no internet, no TV, you know, but if you listen to me in a bit, but, you know, I still have, I also have the over the edge broadcast. I have a TV antenna, and that's tied into a preamp, and that's tied into a bunch of cable boxes that I have in the house at different locations with different TVs, so I still use it as a backup, and not that often, you know, cable's pretty good, but Wednesday night, they talked about it. The basketball game that's going to be on, and sure enough, around 8:10, the game had just started, the cable goes down, and I was able to watch the whole thing on, you know, regular TV on Channel 7 with no cable whatsoever, and for 4 hours, and sure enough, the game was over, and eventually at 12 o'clock at night, the cable came back in. Made me wonder how many people in my neighborhood was running off to the local gin mill, you know, trying to find the basketball game. And anyway, that's my little speech for old technology. WS2.
Paul, you know, I use a digital to analog converter on a Sony Vega Trinitron flat screen CRT TV with a antenna with an amplifier.
Okay, I think great. Yeah, I've got a couple of CRT TVs laying around the house. You know, I got my regular LCD TV, you know, for the living room. But, you know, my other rooms, I could still get over the air broadcast. And I'm on Ronkonkoma, so you need a pretty good antenna. I have one up on the chimney, designed for those bands. And then, like I said, the coax runs down to a preamplifier, and then from there I have a splitter, and they go to two different rooms. So it's fun. It's fun to have as backup. You know, as long as I have electricity, you know, I'm good to go. And even if I don't, I do have a generator, and if I was desperate, I could always start up that if the power fails. But yeah, they're very good days.
I'm about 2.5 miles from the Freedom Tower, and I'm about 3.5 miles from the Empire State Building. I guess I don't need such a big antenna.
But with rabbit ears, if you wanted to, yeah, I do. I guess probably 43 miles or something from. So, you know, I get most of my stations. I get a whole bunch of them on 2, a bunch of them on 4. Channel 7, which, you know, the basketball game was on, no problem. And some other ones as well, you know. You know, good enough for a backup.
Well, I like it. I like setting it up this way, but I hardly turn it on. Most of the TV I watch is on YouTube.
Yeah, I know, that's the way to go. A lot of people are doing that, you know. I mean, if there's something I want to see and it's on YouTube, I'll do that, but I saw it cable, you know. Click around on the stations and see what's on it. I saw the DVR system where I could record shows if I wanted to. And, yeah. But I try to spend more of my time, you know, on 20 meters and on HF, you know. That's the way to go. So, yeah, just had a nice contact with a CW contact with a club out in Pennsylvania. They're really into the submarine. They have you know, special events from that submarine. But, you know, that's a heck of a lot more fun than sitting there watching the news all day. So, okay, yeah, let me do the SpaceNet report, Dave. Nice talking to you.
QSL, have a fantastic night. I listened for a while, but my battery is low on this phone, so I have to charge it up. And just wanted to say that it would be great if there was a video service that has no commercials. 73 for now, KG2RY.
I record everything, and I could, but I don't, you know, I haven't bothered to do it. One of my boxes is Ematic, they call it, Ematic box, and it has on it a like a USB port where you could plug in a flash drive. You know, I could plug in, you know, a 128 kilobyte flash drive and record things if I wanted to. I haven't had a need to do it. But, you know, I mean, if I did not have cable, you know, I would take that extra step and go through that to do that. Just to zip through all their commercials, which you could do. Anyway, very good. As far as the SpaceNet report, yeah, this is WS2N for the make that report to the tech man. We'll go through a couple of topics here. Unless somebody has a question right off the bat, we'll do that. WS2N. Okay, I just want to review the New Glenn rocket situation. Just a week or so ago, the New Glenn rocket blew up on launch pad. We covered that last week. The most likely problem is one of the engines, the seven main engines for the first stage, most likely let loose. When they were testing everything, they wanted to test the all seven BE-4 engines. They were liquid natural gas engines and liquid oxygen. And something let loose, so they haven't released the exact information. I don't even know if they know it, the exact information yet, but they'll find it. They have hundreds of sensors all over these rockets when they're brand new, especially. So they'll find out the cause. The big problem is rebuilding the launch pad that blew up. You know, this thing was like a freaking atomic bomb. A couple of miles away, people's windows shattered. And, nobody got hurt, which is good. They always clear the launch pad. All these launch pads, they clear them 100% anytime they fuel these rockets in case something lets loose. SpaceX had a problem 10 years ago when they tried to launch the satellite for Israel. Yeah, Amos 6 satellite, they had put it into the fairing, ready to go, and their whole rocket blew up and wiped out launch complex 41 over in Cape Canaveral. And it took them probably about a year to rebuild that. They had a plan B, though. They had two other launch complexes at the time where they could launch, so it didn't affect them as badly as Blue Origin with the New Glenn that blew up. New Glenn, you got to remember, this is like a 38-story building, 27 feet wide in diameter, that let loose first stage liquid natural gas. Second stage was on the rocket as well. Liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, the whole thing went. So to get going again, it's going to take a while. They don't have the plan B, second launch complex. So they're looking at rebuilding it. I've heard it depends on who's estimating. It could take anywhere from a year to maybe a year and a half. The guy that's running the Blue Origin rocket company right now, not Jeff Bezos, but he's got a manager that's handling it. His name is Limp, L-I-M-P. He says, we're going to launch before the end of the year. So hopefully he can do that. So they had five missions ready to go. I mean, in a short period of time, the next couple of months, they thought they were going to be able to get that many off the ground. They were going to go into a regular cadence because they've had three successful launches, and this would have been the fourth. But so they were going to start launching one right after the other.
Question, and one way do I?
It's a reusable first stage. So land on a barge, same idea as what SpaceX has been doing for years. The difference between the two, though, is the rockets SpaceX are probably about one third the size of this New Glenn rocket. Big difference in size. So, but the technology, technology is the same. Put a big ship out in sea, 400 or 500 miles out in the Atlantic, and have the first stage come down vertically and land right on the money. And they did that twice so far. The first time they tested their rocket, it didn't work. But the second time and the third time as well. Of course, the fourth time it blew up. So does anybody have any questions before I continue with this?
N1YDY.
N1YDY. Go ahead. WS.
Yeah, Paul. Do they have any idea why the rocket blew up? What actually caused the explosion?
The two people that I listened to, and some of the writings I've read, believe it has to do with one of the rocket engines, the piping most likely let loose, and they're going to have to correct that, of course. There's 7 engines on the first stage, and the idea was to really test these engines. It's a wet dress rehearsal. They want to light them off like 10 seconds or so and then shut them down and make sure everything works. And if that was good, a couple of days later, they were going to go to actually launch back to you.
So when you say a pipe let loose, are we talking about something like a pressurized fuel line or something of that nature?
I mean, these are solid, it looks like solid piping for all these things, coming from the tanks. It could be that, or it could be the engine itself. Once the LNG gas gets into the turbo pumps and the liquid oxygen gets into the turbo pumps, it's forced combustion chamber. I mean, it's possible that from that point into the engine itself, that would be a complete disaster for Blue Origin if that's the case, because then that means it's an actual engine problem and not the piping going to the engine. If that's also a problem, that's a problem then for United Launch Alliance. ULA is buying the same engines, the PE4 engines, and they install them onto their heavy lift Vulcan rocket, which has flown successfully for 3 times. Difference is they put 2 engines on Blue Origin. It's a bigger rocket. They put 7 engines on. So that could be a problem for ULA, United Launch Alliance, which is really a combination of Lockheed and Boeing. But yeah, back to you.
All right. I just didn't understand. I'm still not quite sure what's going on. But all right. Thank you very much for your answer. And when why do I clear?
Exactly. I'm just going what I've heard. I like this one guy, Scott Manley. Scott Manley is a YouTube guy. And he's been doing this for years. Following the space program from one company to the next, and gives reports, and it seems to be pretty good. And that's his guess right now. And then a couple of other people that follow it as well tend to agree. But it's not confirmed. If Blue Origin knows about it, they're keeping it a secret, for now. It's one of the reasons I'm not crazy about private industry. I know that they're doing good, but private industry, they keep everything secret, We don't know what happened yet. Sooner or later, they might or might not release information. That's not good. When NASA was always doing things, we're the paying customer, the taxpayer, and they had a pretty good track record of releasing they might have slowed down the reports at the beginning because maybe they weren't sure, but eventually things would come out, you know, sometimes good, sometimes bad. Look what happened to the two space shuttles that blew up. Eventually they know the cause, not necessarily right away. Private company, maybe they could keep it quiet if they wanted, you know, forever. I don't know. Anyway, WS1. The manager of Blue Origin, one of the reasons he thinks he could accelerate the next launch of New Glenn, he thinks that maybe we don't need a transporter or erector. Transporter erector is this gadget that, you know, they mount the whole rocket onto this contraption and it rides out to the launch pad, in this case it's Launch Complex 36 that Blue Origin got from NASA, you know, 10 years ago, built this whole thing up. Now the transporter erector, like, you know, transports it out there, and then, you know, all hydraulics and everything, it brings the whole rocket up vertically. No fuel in it yet. They wouldn't be able to do that. It would be too heavy. And then they, at that point, they load it up with fuel. And when they launch, the transporter erector backs off quickly, and the rocket takes off, and this way, little damage is done to the transporter erector. Well, the manager wants to do away with this whole system, and I don't know. You know, I haven't figured out why they had it in the first place, but he was going to do away with it, and he's going to erect the whole rocket vertically. You know, and then from there, he's got these rollers, these gigantic rollers. Actually, it's a strange-looking setup. You could have these multiple rollers actually connecting to one another, so you can make them like as big or as long as you want. And they're powered electrically, and he wants to have this vertical rocket roll out to the launch complex, very similar to what the SLS is doing, you know, Space Launch System for NASA. You know, they have their own Corolla, you know, their own Corolla system. They have two of them, you know. And, you know, they're ancient, but they still use them. They were used in the Apollo days, shuttle days. Now they're using them for SLS. And my first thought was, well, why can't they borrow one, you know, the other one? They have two Corollas, but, you know, it's not practical to get one of them. These are massive things. It's like moving a building itself, you know. To even if they wanted to do it, they'd have to drive it over 6 miles to get to Launch Complex 36. It just it wouldn't work. They need something more modern, something less weight. Not something that's not going to destroy the infrastructure as it rolls through the you know, up to the launch pad.